Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
And this is the race now to the last fence. It's Arkell on the stand side for Ireland and Milhouse for England on the far side. Arkell going away now from Milhouse. This is the champion. This is the best.
Sunshine 106.8.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, as always, we'll be kicking off with the papers and a chat with our very own Ken Doherty live from the UK. In racing, we'll be chatting to George McDonough, racing pundit and over-the-line show co-host, as he previews this weekend's races and shares his lucky 15. We had three winners from George 2 weeks ago, so I'm looking forward to getting those tips again. In GAA, Declan Drake will be in studio. He'll be reviewing the Dublin defeat by Mayo, with ex-Mayo footballer Conor Mortimer also on the line, and he'll join us. Declan will be looking back on the ladies' semi-final victory over Mayo also. The former Dublin minor under 21 manager and former Ballinteer senior hurling manager Sean Lane will join us in studio then to preview the hurling final between Limerick and Cork on Sunday. And that should be one hell of a game. In football, we're going to have Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to chat about all that happened in the League of Ireland this week and, of course, the Europa Conference League and the Premier League. And we're delighted as well to be joined by a special guest on the line by Basketball Ireland senior men's head coach Mark Keenan. He'll be chatting about the Irish victory over Malta in the FIBA European Championship for Small Countries and the fantastic news that they will be taking part in the European Eurobasket 2025 qualifiers. So, as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Time to chat to our very own Ken now. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
Yeah, very good. It's a bit of a damp day over here, and apparently, listen to the weather forecast, it's going to get pretty rotten. I have a few matches to go to this afternoon, so I better bring the wet gear. I better bring the wet gear. But yeah, no, other than that, all good, I have to say. All good with you?
Yeah, all good here. I'm at the, of course, the British Open here at the Morningside Arena in Leicester. It's been a great week. You know, it's been very exciting. I don't know whether you've caught any of it on ITV4, but it's been it's a new format, best of fives, you know, and an FA Cup style draw every round. So it's been really exciting. So we've had some great matches, loads of shocks.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of 1-4-7s and everything. And then, of course, we had that unprecedented match between Rhianne Evans and Mark Allen, who have had a baby together almost 15 years ago and are in court over the over child payments, and they had to play each other this week. So we had a bit of everything.
We talked about this last week, and it was the real. It was almost like the Coronation Street build up to. We were waiting for the drama of when they met, and I saw the clip of it. It was a little bit cringy. The hand came out from Alan to shake hands before the match started, but the head went down from Rhianne Evans, and she just took her break. No handshake.
Oh no. There was no handshake there, no, absolutely not. No quarter given, and it was, it was. It was a tough match for both of them, there's no doubt about that, you know. And there was incredible build-up, incredible media interest as well. And it proved to be a really great match
it
as well.
Did, I mean, that was the
thing. She was so unlucky. The turn of a ball, and she was in the next round. So it was very dramatic, and there was no handshake afterwards, as well. But it was really exciting for everybody, but not for those two, unfortunately.
Well, I know, but as you said, though, it was a cracking game. And I suppose the more important message here, Ken, is just to see Rhianne Evans competing in that tournament. And the way it's an amazing thing to see, you know, a sport where women are able to compete on a level playing field and you know, give as good as you get and have every bit as good a chance of winning as the men do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought she played superbly well. I mean, it was funny enough, when she got her wild card at the beginning, in the summertime, Mark Allen was the first one on Twitter to say that she shouldn't be allowed to play, you know, that women shouldn't compete against the men on the tour, which was totally wrong. I think she quashed that argument the way she competed against him.
Yeah.
The other day. So yeah, I thought she was fantastic herself. And there's another girl, Neon Yi from Hong Kong, are both on. They've been given 2-year wild cards, and I thought it was well justified the way she played. It was well justified for me, and anyway, it didn't matter the way she played. I just thought it's great to open the game up to women and encourage the women as well to pick up the game, and young girls, you know, that there is a possible place for them on the tour against the men and competing for the big prizes. So I thought she did all the women proud who play snooker around the world, for sure.
Absolutely. Like, she's a 12-time world champion. People don't kind of get that. I mean, like, of all the sports, and darts is another one where we're seeing women starting to make progress as well. Like, where it's a skill sport as much as anything else, there isn't really any reason why they can't compete on a level playing field. So it's great to see.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. I mean, we see it in horse racing as well, you know, a very young race with Blackmore, Holly Doyle, and all the great, you know, lady jockeys that, you know, they're competing as well as the men, which is fantastic. But it's great. It just sends a great message out for snooker that it's open to both men and women. And it's great encouragement, as I said, to women and young girls around the world to play snooker.
Do you know something, Ken? It's interesting that you say that, because horse racing never came into my head there. And do you know why?
Yeah.
You don't even see it that way anymore. I don't think of it
male
and female. I just think of them as jockeys. And that's because it's been in so long in the sport.
That's a good thing. And it's a good thing for women as well, that they're not recognised as women jockeys. They're just recognised as jockeys. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You didn't have a great bit of luck yourself, unfortunately. I mean, you pulled back the first frame, won all, and you know, like, you're playing well, and it just wasn't to be. We're all heartbroken.
This format, though, you know what I mean? It's very quick for it. It's rapid. It's very exciting. I mean, we've had a lot of shocks. Judd Trump, the world number one, went out yesterday on his birthday. And subsequently has lost his number one spot now. So Mark Selby takes over number one for the time being until the next tournament, I suppose. You know, we have some interesting lineup. We still have Mark Williams, Ricky Walden in there, Dave Gilbert, who won last week in the Championship League. But you've got the likes of Elliot Slesser in there. We have an Iranian. Gary Wilson is playing Dave Gilbert. We have Zhu Yulong, a young guy, Elliot Slesser. So we've got Liu Ning as well. We've got some young guys in there coming through, which is great as well. And it's a great opportunity for these young lads to try and stamp the mark and win their first ranking tournaments. You know, so the quarterfinals and the semi-finals today, and then the final is on Sunday.
Yeah, good stuff. Ali Carter, of course, did knock out Mark Selby. And he's in good form at the moment. He's kind of, I think he's chasing, he hasn't won for about 5 years. So I think this will be one he'd definitely like to take down. How do you fancy his chances?
Well, the funny thing was, he made a 1-4-7 yesterday and then lost 3-1 to Elliot. He got through to the last 16 last night, but then went out 3-1 to Elliot Slesser and made a 1-4-7. It was the only frame he won. And get this, he's made 3 1-4-7s in his career, and they've all come in tournaments where other players have made a 1-4-7 as well. So he's had to share the 1-4-7 prize with John Higgins,
John
that
Higgins.
He made one. On the very first day,
I saw that, his first frame, first
game.
In terms of that, for the season, everything is opening up as per normal again. And
we've had the crowds back in. I mean, we've had I think the final is a sellout, which is fantastic. Now, each individual that comes in has to provide their antigen test results, you know, which is fair enough. But it's just wonderful to have the crowds back in. You know, it's a new arena here for us on the snooker circuit in Leicester. But it's always been a hotbed of snooker. Of course, the great Willie Thorne came from Leicester, only down the road. You know, Mark Selby's from Leicester. So it's a great hotbed of snooker over the years. And it's great to have the crowds back in. And it's there's been good crowds all week, and it's going to be a sellout for Sunday, and I'm sure it'll be sold out today as well for the quarterfinals and semi-finals. So it's fantastic all round, you know.
Give us your tip. Who's going to win?
That's a good one. I think Dave Gilbert. I think he won last week. in the championship. It's his first ranking tournament win in 20 years. He could win two. He hasn't won anything for 20 years. He could win two tournaments in 2 weeks. So I'm going to go for it, Dave Gilbert.
Okay, very good. We'll take a note. Stick that into whatever we're considering this weekend. Yeah. We've got George on later. He gave us three. George McDonough gave us three winners 2 weeks ago. So anything he says today, we'll be certainly taking note of.
Absolutely. That'll be going in the book. That'll be going in the book.
We put Gilbert in there alongside that as well. Hold your response.
What about the Dubs? What about the Dubs last week?
What a game.
Yeah.
What a match.
I mean, I
watched it back again on the Sunday game. Kind of get the best of it all there. And it was just an amazing game of football. Because after 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and I was talking to Jane here this morning about it as well, I went, that's it. That's grand. Job done now. I head off and I was doing a few bits around the place and I was kind of one eye in the match. And then I had to go out later on for the second half and I was doing something. And then word came back. And I was told that they'd lost. And I was just, what's going on here? Like, I couldn't believe it. But back in the Sunday game, it's hard to remember a game swinging that way as much as it did. You know, the Dublin just seemed to just stop and Mayo just took over.
They collapsed like a cheap tent, as they say, you know. But I thought Mayo played fantastically well to come back, you know. And I mean, listen, Dublin, you know, they've been great champions over the years, and this was a game that just I think when they got so far ahead, they thought they were just going to coast, and Mayo, they were going to sort of just keep the ball basically and not even, you know, just look for holes in Mayo. But it didn't work out like that. Mayo just came out in that second half like men possessed, and an unbelievable transformation. And listen, as a Dub fan, of course, you know, you don't, if they're going to lose, you don't mind them losing to Mayo. They've been trying for years and years and years to get their hands on that All-Ireland. So it's going to be a fantastic final. But yeah, a great turnaround. And they just came back brilliantly. I thought Dublin lost their discipline as well. They got a bit frustrated, lost their discipline. And that cost them dearly as well. But a fantastic semi-final. Absolutely brilliant. Great to watch.
It was amazing. And some of the skills and the conditions and everything else were unbelievable to be able to point out those skills. Like a half-time scoreline at 10 points to 4 to Dublin. You're thinking job done. Mayo just seemed to go in and get at least a life where they were... Like, they just... It sort of went for it. It was like as if all the shackles had been taken off and they just went, you know what, let's just go for it. Like, I mean, Lee Keane
had a
huge point around the 50-minute mark, and that was kind of 3 points that they got. And all of a sudden you could see the belief starting to build in the Mayo lads, and there were...
Yeah, you know, were and the panic. And you saw the panic in Dublin as well, didn't you? I mean, it was like a swing both ways from, like, you know, the sort of the sway of the Mayo fans and the Mayo team, and then the sort of the panic crept in at the back, particularly for the Dublin, you know, trying to get the ball out. The distribution was poor. They were giving the ball away. I mean, the panic with the goalkeeper and the two fullbacks at the end, like, that gave the point, you know, for the goalkeeper to score, was just like laughable. But I just thought the pressure from Mayo, and that's what can happen. We all know what can happen in our own game, you know, the pressure coming from one side. And you sort of go into your shell a little bit, and it was just the way they turned around was fantastic, you know?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Did you see that hit as well? Jesus.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, that was like something like you used to do in your day.
You know, the thing is, if we had done that, you know, there's repercussions. I think they got that one wrong, definitely. I don't think it was an intentional thing by Small. I think, you know, he just went in for the big charge and the big hit and, you know, in the heat of battle. But, like, it was nasty. And, geez, like, you know, we saw the result of it. McLaughlin, his jaw destroyed. So, I suppose if Mayo didn't go on to win after that, there would have been all sorts of question marks about it.
I know, yeah. And then it nearly went on and scored a goal from it. I mean, Baskill just hit it wide, didn't he? I mean, that would have been some turning point had that gone in, you know, a controversial turning point. But, I thought there was a lot of big hits, wasn't there, in that match? I mean, it was very physical, very skillful. Yeah, great fight between the two sides. And for the Mayo fans as well, it was just fantastic. And for... You know, the manager as well, who's been trying for years, you know, and that team. It's great. And I wish him well, you know. I mean, it's going to be tough against Kerry.
you know, tough decisions, you know, O'Shea off and, you know, making some big calls, taking off your captain. That wasn't an easy thing to do when they were behind. Some big calls, and they all worked out in the end. What about the final? Do you think, you know, will they go on and do the job?
I hope so. I mean, Kerry are a great team. They've come out with sometimes, you know, when you get over that big hurdle. No, of course not. Yeah. But I think Kerry will beat Tyrone. But I think, you know, sometimes when you get over that big hurdle, it's very hard to come back down. Like, you know, so you got to come back down and then build yourself up for the final. But I'm sure they're going to, you know, they'll realise this is their great chance, you know, and I hope they do it. You know, they've waited long enough, you know.
Yeah, well, we're going to have
Connor. And that course is still on them. That course is still on them.
I know, yeah. Well, we've Connor Mortimer on just after 10 o'clock to talk about it. Of course, he's involved in two All-Irelands himself and couldn't get it across the line. And they were against Kerry as well, so he knows what it's going to take to beat or to try and beat Kerry. So it'll be interesting to get his take on it. But, yeah, I mean, Tyrone obviously still in with a shout, but Kerry just, like, there were a lot of people's favourites before the tournament even started. Even when the Doves were in it, they still felt Kerry were coming of age, so it's going to be a huge one for Mayo, and if they can dig out. It'll be interesting to hear from him now whether or not he thinks they can get the same resolve and the same go back to the well and dig up again to try and beat Kerry in that final. But it'll be a cracking game by the looks of what we've seen so far anyway.
I'm really, really looking forward to that, you know. I think Kerry have got some great young blood coming through, haven't they? And I think they will be very, very tough to beat. I wouldn't write off Tyrone, but I think Kerry will get to the final, and I hope Mayo win it for sure. Yeah,
I think everybody's on the side of Mayo at this stage now. Like you said, after the years and years of heartache, I think it's time for them to get a result. Okay, let's have a look across the water there. You talked last week about United. We talked about important to get a good start and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
in the Prem, and by God, they did 5-1. That was some start.
There was, wasn't it? And I mean, you know, for all the stick that Pogba's been getting from Man United fans over the years, he certainly delivered four assists, you know, and Fernandes with a hat-trick. I think that Fernandes, he's got to be one of the best players I think United have ever had.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt. You know, his hat-trick was just, you know, sublime. And a great start. And a great, you know, a packed, you know, Old Trafford as well. Having the crowds back, you know, really sort of, That's what the sport is all about, isn't it? You know, it's what every sport is about, playing in front of big crowds and performing like that. Great start to the Premiership all around, you know. And Man City getting beat by Spurs as well was just the icing on the cake.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they were 9-1 and before that match, Spurs to win the game. 9-1. So, I mean, that's absolutely crazy. But, you know, Son again, what a player. But with the whole drama going on around Kane and all the rest of the stuff, that 1-0 victory for Spurs was unbelievable stuff. It really was. And
I have to say,
you know, watching City, they like, we know what an amazing team they are, and we know they come good later on the season, but they were pretty limp now, to say the least, I thought.
City, yeah, I think so. Well. No, I didn't think so. No, and it was quite funny with all the crowd singing, you know, because Harry Kane was nowhere to be seen. He wasn't in the ground or anything like that. He hadn't been training with the team. Are you watching Harry Kane? We're all singing, all the Spurs fans. Well, we're singing in the stands. It was fantastic. But a great start for Spurs and a great start for the manager as well. Remember, he was with Wolves last year, Nuno, and he's done a great job there so far. And it's a good start all round, I think, to the Premiership. City will come good. There's no doubt about that. Grealish, you know, and if they get, it looks like they're in for Harry Kane, so they might end up with Harry Kane and Grealish in the same side. So they're going to be back up there again. But yeah, good start, and a good start for Liverpool, I suppose, as well, beating Norwich. They look to be back. Van Dijk is back. They've got that bit of solidity back in the team, and they've got the front three firing again. Of course, Salah and Jota scoring, and I think it bodes well. I'm really excited about the season starting already. Couldn't come around quick enough, you know, after all the events of the Euros.
I love the way you're speaking through your teeth there, trying to give a bit of credit to Liverpool. I suppose that's a good start for Liverpool as well. 3-0.
I would have preferred an Orange victory, to be honest. You don't say.
The other team doing well. Chelsea. Alan Cawley was talking about them. He really likes them this season. He's talking about some good buys and convincing 3-0 win over Palace.
Yeah, very, very good. I think that manager has done a great job with them. You know, they won that Super Cup, of course, in Belfast against Villarreal. They, you know, the Champions League win was fantastic. They bought Lukaku, you know, an ex-Red Devil, you know, but I think he's going to bring a lot of goals to the side. You know, he'll be better than Havertz. He'd be better than Timo Werner as well. So he'll be a lot more solid. He'll get a lot of goals. And yeah, I think they're going to be right up there towards the end. I think they're going to be a big danger. Good outside bet, I think, for the Premiership.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it. They've got some good players. Well, I think that's pretty much it. It's good chatting to you. It's been a busy week, no doubt about it. You're going to be busy for the week anyway yourself, working on the commentary and stuff like that.
Yeah, back in today. We start again at 1 o'clock, so we've got a 4 quarterfinals, and then, of course, we've got the 2 semi-finals tonight, and then the big final tomorrow. But it's been really good. I think ITV have done a great job, their whole production. We're getting some really great young figures as well, which is good for the sport. So it's great to have ITV, Eurosport, and, of course, BBC all covering it. And, long may it continue. It's a new tournament, but I think it's definitely going to stay, you know.
Well, I think that format definitely excites people, and they like the way it is.
Yeah.
As you said, the way it's the FA Cup style draw after everything, you just don't know. I think that's a great way of playing sport, you know. That I think, you know, just having a redraw every time rather than, you know, it ending up with bottom half strong or top half strong and getting a sale.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I think it's a great way of doing it. Gives everybody a
chance. Yeah, fantastic. It's very exciting. And funny enough, you know, the two guys that are in the quarterfinals, they're both from the same area, Gary Wilson and Elliot Slesser. When World Snooker announced about this tournament being best of fives and a redraw every round, FA Cup style draw, these two were forced on Twitter to give out about like the short format. We're going too short. We should be playing longer frames and all this. But this is probably their best chance of ever winning a ranking tournament in this short format.
Yeah.
Avoiding the big siege, you know, in the best of fives. Because even like, as we've seen, Judd Trump lose and Selby lose and Higgins losing yesterday, that all these great players are very vulnerable in the short format, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for these, the likes of Slesser and Gary Wilson, who were giving out about it on Twitter.
This is their best chance.
Ironically, they're in the quarterfinals. Yeah. They're probably the best chance of ever winning a ranking tournament, you know? So I'm going to be giving them some stick on the TV today, for sure.
Delete buttons pressed on their Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely.
All right, Kent, mind yourself. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Yeah, okay. Have a good weekend. Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care. That's our own Ken Doherty there, giving us all the latest insight. And as he said, the snooker it's an exciting format, well worth having a look at for anybody who wants something else to add into the long list of sport that's going on this weekend. Okay, we still have loads to come on the show. George McDonough, racing pundit and over-the-line co-host. I'm sure there'll be plenty of you out there excited to hear what he has to say after picking 3 winners for us 2 weeks ago. So he'll be on to give us his thoughts on everything to do with the horse racing. We're going to have an extended GAA section with the hurling and, of course, the football. Conor Mortimer will be on to talk to us about that wonderful game for Mayo last weekend. Not so great for the Dubs fans. And Sean Lane will also be in to talk about the Cork-Limerick final. And Alan Cawley will be talking soccer. And just coming up after the next break, we'll be talking to Mark Keenan, who, of course, the head of Basketball Ireland, senior men's head coach, to talk about the wonderful victory in the small championship for small countries. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. We'd love to hear from you by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Now, time to turn our attention to basketball now, and I'm delighted to be joined by the Ireland senior men's head coach, Mark Keenan. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie.
Yeah,
good to be on. Thanks a million.
Well, it's good to be on, and you're on because you had a great result, and you know it has to be championed how well it's going, and that win over Malta in the FIBA European Champions for small countries. You could see the excitement; it was right across the media. There was plenty of coverage of it. It meant a huge amount.
Oh, look, absolutely. It was a fantastic week. For the team, you know, and for basketball. It's a pity we had no fans in the stadium to witness, but we had a great support online, you know, as all the games were streamed live. So to cap it off on Sunday against Malta, yeah, it was just incredible, you know, super week.
It can't have been, like all sport, it can't have been an easy time, but in particular, basketball and indoor sport has suffered most with the restrictions around COVID. So I know elite teams were allowed to continue to train, but sort of curtailed, let's say. So, you know, that puts it into context even more how good it was to get the victory and get the players out there performing and being able to show what they can do.
Yeah. So look, we had a very long layoff. As you said, kind of we were part of the elite sport scenario at the beginning, but then indoor sport was really taken out of that. So like half of our team, or a little over half of our team, were all guys that were playing in the Super League here.
Yeah.
So they, you know, had no games and no team training. You know, for the whole of last season, as it was cancelled. You know, lucky enough then we had, you know, a half a dozen guys that were playing professionally, you know, in Europe, which was super. But look, when we got the green light in April, May, you know, for the senior men and women to get back training ahead of these championships, the guys had kept themselves in great shape. And look, it didn't take us too long to kind of get up to speed. So lack of games was a worrying thing, all right. But we got two friendly internationals against Slovakia, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the championship started, which was a huge benefit to us to get two really competitive games under our belt. Which kind of set us up then for the tournament. But look, fair play to the players. They kept themselves in shape and it didn't take them long to get back up to speed.
Excellent. And just for our listeners who maybe not up to speed on basketball, where do we stand in terms of the international rankings? Where do we stand in terms of competition? I know I'll be talking to you in a moment about the fact that we're going to be taking part in the European Eurobasket 2023 or 25 qualifiers, isn't it? But where are we at in terms at present? Where are we at in terms of other international sides?
Well, kind of world ranking numbers I think we're down at around 100, or just over 100 now. Hopefully last weekend's win will move us up a few places. But you know, I think basketball had a setback, you know, back about 10 years ago, when international teams were all taken out of European competition because of kind of financial issues. And that kind of did set back the sport because we were at that stage at a higher level, you know, in Europe. But look, you have to start off again. So a couple of years ago, when everything was reinstated, the team, I think this is the third time the team has played in the small countries tournament. And look, delighted to get over the line, you know, in the third attempt. And now we move up into that kind of qualifying stage for bigger competitions within Europe. You know, there's several steps along the way that you can move up, you know, towards, you know, the elite European championships and then world championships. So you have to qualify nearly every step of the way and move up. So look, it's a great jump forward for us with that news coming out yesterday. So it's very exciting, and the games are going to come around very quickly because the group stages start this November with the first two games. It's like into the soccer groupings now, Reggie, where you have a group of, it's four teams now in our group.
Yeah.
And you play home and away over the next kind of year and a half to try and make it to the next level.
Right.
So, look, yeah, very, very exciting. And look, I think the way the team performed last week in all the games kind of shows that Irish basketball is trending in the right direction.
Mm.
We've got some great high-level players now as they play professionally in Europe, playing in the Super League here, which, the standard of the league is rising all the time. Mm. So that's, we want to try and keep that momentum going now and keep pushing it on.
And tell me, you mentioned they're reinstated. Obviously, that means finances and proper finance have been put in place around them. Have you seen a growth in the sport as a result of that? And is it across women and men? Is it the same sort of growth within them?
Yeah, look, basketball, I think people, it's underestimate, I don't want to say underestimate the numbers, but it's the biggest indoor sport in the country.
Yeah.
And, at schools level, underage level, there's, it's huge. It's up there with the GAA, and soccer and other rugby, your own sport, the elite sports there, that the numbers playing the game, are huge. I suppose the whole thing then is the facilities, getting the gyms up to higher standards and, having everything that goes, works around the game, with the strength and conditioning side and, the health and nutrition side. It's kind of building all that around the game, to bring it to another level, to make it that bit more professional. But the numbers are huge, Reggie, in terms of the involvement in the sport.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think people don't really realise, actually how many people, play the game.
Yeah, I'd be perfectly honest with you, Mark. I only found out myself because my own two sons play it, and I wouldn't have had any idea. My cousin Jordan Lee, the Paralympian, he also played under 15 for Ireland in the basketball.
Yeah.
And, I knew how big the sport was, but until you get in and you have somebody that's actually involved in it, like my own two kids, you don't actually realise how big it is. And it blew me away how many schools, clubs, courts there are, indoor facilities and everything else. And the quality of it is unbelievable as well. And that's why I'm kind of, I was a little bit taken aback that we've, I don't want to say drop down, but even that we're down at 100 in the world rankings, because it is so widely played. But as you said, it's just probably because there isn't enough funding put into it or enough effort being put into to bring it up to the elite level.
Yeah. And look, also, look, it's great to be on with you guys today now. But I think, the more media, the more media coverage, the more exposure we can get, the more TV we can get. Look, everybody probably knows the National Cup final is on TV live at the end of January, every year. But that's near, and so the schools stuff, all right, has been covered as well in the past by TG Carr. And we need more exposure for the game like that, for visually to be out there.
Yeah.
To try and drive it on like the other big sports,
Yeah, no question about it. Well, that's what always does it. I remember when, my own sport, rugby, started in a professional basis, it all was down to the Celtic League as it was then, or the Pro 14 or 16 as it is now, a professional league that people could see on a weekly basis. That's what developed the sport. And if you don't have that, you haven't got a hope, because it's all about exposing people to the game and getting them to fall in love with it and understand it a bit better. Because to be honest with you, I find it a bit confusing, Mark. I won't lie to you. There's rules in it I just don't understand, but my kids are educating me.
Look, it's like every sport. If you're not if you're not fully into rugby as well, yeah. It's very hard.
It's very confusing.
What's going on in the ruck there.
All right, Mark, listen, it's been great chatting to you, and congratulations again. Fantastic win. I wish you all the very best in your upcoming qualifiers, both the men and the women, of course, involved in that. And hopefully I'll be chatting to you again very soon as we see qualification for that.
Thanks a million, Reggie. Thanks for having me on. Thank you. You're very welcome.
Good to talk to you. That's Mark Keenan there, and he's the head coach for the basketball senior men's team. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but when I come back, I'll be talking to George McDonough about all things horse racing. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. Okay, time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined on the line by George McDonough, of course, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host. Good morning, George. How are you?
Very well, Reggie. Very well.
I tell you, you're under pressure this week. There's no doubt about it. 3 winners 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, look, we're lucky, Reggie. This game is all about opinions, and some day it falls to you, some day it doesn't. It's like going into a scrum, Reggie. You can get penalised even though you might have said you held your feet. It's a fact of life. We do our best.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you made a lot of people happy 2 weeks ago, so we'll get to that shortly. Before we start looking at a few tips, what's the main news from the sport during the week?
Oh, for me, it was the success of young David Egan on Mishriff, Reggie, on Wednesday at York in the Judmont International. To me, and a lot more people, probably the best 10 furlong race in Europe. That of the Irish Champion Stakes of Vite. I've always thought the York race is a true test of a horse. Big, long home straight, massive crowd. And to see David Egan when his first group won in the UK on that, of course, David Egan would be well known. His mom, Sandra Hughes, trained Thunder and Roses to win an Irish Grand National ridden by Katie Watch. And his grandfather was the much missed and much loved Desi Hughes, the man who rode Monksfield to win a champion hurdle and trained Hardy Eustace to win 2 of them under Conor O'Dwyer. A wonderful man and a great racing family. And this young man is absolutely going to the top. We're very proud here in Galway of a young man called Ross O'Ryan, a great ambassador for the sport. David Egan this year, another young man going places, rode this horse to win in Saudi Arabia early in the year, then on to Dubai for the Shima Classic, a really top class race. A little disappointing in the King George probably, and was beaten by St Mark's Basilica in the Eclipse, but on Wednesday last stamped his authority as probably in the UK definitely the best 10 furlong horse that they have. And it was wonderful to see David Egan being part of that success. He's a wonderfully talented jockey.
Yeah.
But just to see his interview afterwards, Reggie, to be honest, those who knew his grandfather, you could see that personality shining through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's wonderful for him. And John and Taddy Gosden as well, of course, trainers. And it was a hugely convincing win as well. Like, I mean, I think, what was it, 6 lengths or something in the end?
It was 4 and 4.5 in the end, but it was the manner of the success, Reggie. He just stamped his authority. They threw love, they threw everything at him. But young David Egan never panicked, and that probably tells you he knew what was underneath him. Now, whether he'll frank that form with St Mark's Basilica, we don't know.
Right.
I don't think they'll clash at Leopardstown in a couple of weeks' time. I don't think Mishriff will make the journey. But someday, maybe it might be, we might have to go all the way to Del Mar, Reggie, in California, to see that clash in the Breeders' Cup.
Absolutely. We'll keep an eye out for that. Very interesting. Anything else?
Probably not, no. Good racing in Ireland at Killarney. Sad thing, Reggie.
Yeah.
Small little point, and I keep making it to everybody I talk to. Packed houses at the Naismar this week in York. Great attendances. We're limited to 500 here in Ireland. Killarney, one of the great picturesque meetings in this country in August. Just 500 people allowed each day, and they were sold out. Great to see them sold out, but there'll be a lot more people. And it's an outside venue. There's no inside entertainment at the moment in racing. It's an outdoor, it's classed as an outdoor activity, and I think we could do with a lot more than 500 people. But hopefully, everything goes well at Croke Park tomorrow with 40,000, and we might just see an increase, especially for the Irish Champions weekend and the Stone.
Well, there's a lot of very confused people. There's no doubt about it, George. How there can be 40,000 at one thing and 500 at another and none at another, you know? So it's a lot of very, very confused people. And hopefully next week we're supposed to be getting this famous road map that they keep going on about. We might get a little bit of clarity, but it's daft, if you ask me, in an outdoor event that they can't have more than 500 people at one sport and you can in another. but no sense. But anyway,
that's no, Reggie, I think if before that announcement, I think if they played Talking Heads, we're on the road to nowhere. I think it'd be an apt piece of music for the walkout.
I know what you're saying. Okay, let's have a look at Saturday's Lucky 15 then, and we'll see where we can go with that.
We're going for value all the way through today, Reggie. First up for me is in the 2:35 at York. Or sorry, the 3:35 at York. That's the Ebor, the big race of the day, the big race for people in York. 300,000 quid going to the winner, a 500,000 quid pot in total. These races have been increased in value over the years to show the handicaps. Small field condition races, not for me. Big handicaps, put up the money and the higher quality animal will run. It's a wonderful renewal. Mount Leinster gives Willie Mullins a big chance of winning it again. He won it with Sazenta back in 2012. John Murta has won it in the past. He has Sonny Boy Liston and Nirjan. They all have chances. But I'm going with last year's winner, Fujairah Prince. A lot of racing is about opinions. And I thought when he was third to Hookham over course and trip at a Group 3 contest last time out at York, they were getting ready for today. I'm not saying he wasn't trying, but I just thought there was a little bit of condition on him and they were going to be ready to defend their crown. He's off a £9 higher mark. He's a 12-1 shot. I think he's cracking value and people should check their bookmakers for each way terms. But I think Fujairah Prince, number two in the 3:35, will hopefully be the first of our selections. He's not the first to run, but he was the number one selection for me. Wahran is the second one in the 4:45, again at York. This horse, to me, in a four-runner race last time, was ultra impressive. They didn't go fast enough for him. Trained by Michael Stout, very shrewd operator. Ridden by Kieran Schumacher today. Got a £10 penalty for winning at Newmarket, had previously won a Pontefract. He's much on the improve, I think. Readily beat Big Kitten on that occasion. Stronger pace today, sure to suit. He's 8-10-1. I think he's cracking value. There was a bit of money around him this morning. I think he'll take a lot of beating. Number 15, Wahran in the 4:45 at York. We're coming back to Ireland then for the third one. And that goes at Killarney. And incidentally, in Ireland tonight, Pont, the likely favourite for next year's 2,000 guineas run, that's Point Lonsdale in the 6:40 at the Curragh. So that's for the future reference. But today, Pont Evane runs in the 4:35 at Killarney. It's an ultra-competitive handicap chase. He desperately disappointing last time, threw the dummy out quite early behind Capuchinix. But prior to that, was fourth to Powers Bomb at Punchestown, but at the big Punchestown Festival, looked all over the winner at the final fence, I thought, in a good class handicap chase won by Foxy Jacks. Finished second. He's only ever won one race, but a lot of his rivals have question marks about them. And I think this horse can win for Paul Townend and Willie Mullins. There is another horse in that race. When I finish this, I will mention about future reference. The final one for me, Reggie, is the Knapp in the 2:45 at Sandown, and that is John Thady Gosling's Indigo Girl, ridden by Frankie de Tory. Disappointing first time up this season. She missed the classic trials, having a little setback. She was fourth to Dream Loper at Ascot, which she never settled. Very interesting to me that de Tory looked after her, I thought, later on. Last year, she beat Mother Earth and Snowfall. And we've seen what those two Aidan O'Brien runners have done since. She beat, she won the Mayhill Stakes, a very good Mayhill Stakes at Doncaster. Went on and ran that very good race behind Dream Loper last time out, but went very well in the Filly's Mile, in which Snowfall and Mother Earth, we've seen what they've done this season. Pretty Gorgeous won that race. And I just think Indigo Girl, significant that the Tory goes to Sandown. And this is it could have had the choice of three or four to ride in the Ebor, the big race at York. And I think it's very significant. He rides a fair few animals for George Strawbridge's operation, the white with the green hoop. I think that's the Knapp selection, number six, Indigo Girl, in the 2:40, Reggie.
Excellent stuff. Okay, that's a great Lucky 15. There's some good value across the board in that as well. So we'll certainly have a look at that. There's a couple of other ones, but there's a possible Money Watch horse you're mentioning.
Yes, this Elegant. Elegant Ellen, owned by Gorham and Liam Mulrine, trained by Dennis Hogan, very shrewd trainer. Ran just four times in the UK for Tin Easterby over a variety of trips, 6 and 7 furlongs. Got a handicap mark of 64 to run in the 4th one. Then OK at Thirsk. Interesting, this horse was bought at the sales. Has its first run in Irish, has missed two engagements recently when entered up. Has a pound lower rating than the run in England of 63 and a 5 furlong handicap at 8:10 tonight. If we're still awake at the Curragh. if there's money for this horse today, I think it should be noted. Owner landed a touch with a three-year-old hurdler in Ballinrobe 2 weeks ago, Calvados. I think this horse, Elegant Elegant, is going to be a big day in her. It's low-grade handicaps, yes, but she will win a race, and I think it's very shrewd connections. Joey Sheridan riding for Dennis Hogan takes my eye, and I think that could be profitable if there's money for it. We'll find out that later in the day. Finally, Reggie, yeah. I mentioned that Pond Elan at Killarney. In that race, number nine, I like the way your thinking runs. I've been watching this horse for a while. I thought he might have a target this summer. Has had a couple of runs back this year and now runs in his handicap chase debut today at Killarney in the 4:35. It's a long way away, Reggie. It's next July. I think I like the way you're thinking. We'll win the 2022 Galway Plate.
Oh, very good. That is a good bit of way. We're thinking well in advance there. We don't mind
twice a winner at Galway overhauled. I thought maybe this year might be the year. Had a couple of nice pops in novice chases. But it's a very interesting horse. And I think a horse that's a lot better than his rating of 129.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Just quickly before I let you go, I see Aidan O'Brien is trying to make it sixth in the Yorkshire Oaks with Snowfall. You think that's got a good chance?
She done that readily, yes. 2 days ago. She's very, very good. Yeah. She's on target for the arc, Reggie. It'll be a massive clash, but she will meet Colts for the first time in the arc.
Right.
Can she do it? If O'Brien sins are there, I think she can. He's very, very shrewd, and they've campaigned this filly very, very wisely this year. They're very, very smart. They're very keen on her, and I think that this underfoot conditions in Longchamp will suit Reggie, yeah. But it promised to be a fascinating Prix de l'Arc.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, that's great. George, as always, huge amount of insight there. Really looking forward to seeing how we get on today across the board.
Pressure is on, Reggie. Pressure is on.
Yeah, pressure's on, but don't worry. I'm sure you're well able for it. Wouldn't be the first time. All right, George. Take care. We'll chat to you again.
Thanks,
very
Reggie.
Shortly. All the best.
Thanks, Reggie. Bye-bye.
That's George McDonough there, Racing Pundit, and Over the Line show co-host as well, giving us his thoughts. And his lucky 15, I'll give it to you again because I know there'll be a lot of you very, very interested. For Saturday's Lucky 15. So we're looking at the 3:35 in York, Fajera Prince, that's a 12-1 shot. Then in York in the 4:45, Waran, that's Waharan, 10-1 shot. Then Point Avon in the 4:35 in Killarney. And then the nap of the day is Indigo Girl, which is in the 2:40 in Sandown. Then there's a couple to watch as well. Elegant Ellen in the 8:10 in the Curra, and as he said there as well, I like the way you're thinking running in Killarney as well. And well, Snowfall is odds on at 2-5, so it's probably not worth putting into anything there, but worth having there in the back of your mind as well if you want an absolute banker. Okay, we're going to have to go to news now shortly, but we still have loads coming up on the show. We're going to be having an extended GAA section where I'll be talking to Conor Mortimer, and of course Declan Drake will be in studio as well with us to discuss that and look back on last week's win by Mayo over the Dubs. And Sean Lane, former Dublin minor under 21 manager and former Ballinteer senior hurling manager, will be in as well to discuss the huge game between Cork and Limerick for the final on Sunday. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news, and you can text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, for many last week, they thought it might be a bit of a foregone conclusion that Dublin were going to make it to another final, but there was plenty here in studio that thought differently, and the result turned out to be that way as Mayo went on to beat the Dubs and extra time. And one man who would have been watching it very closely and indeed would be delighted with his former ex-Mayo footballer and All-Ireland finalist himself on a couple of occasions, Conor Mortimer. Good morning, Conor. How are you?
How are we getting on, lads? You okay?
Oh, we're getting on great. Declan Drake's in studio here with me as well as Sean Lane. And I'll be honest with you, it was a game that I was watching for the first 20 minutes and I was thinking, here we go again. It's, you know, going to be the usual old story. Got to half time, it was 10-4, and Mayo didn't look to be offering a whole lot. They were kind of thereabouts, but not really in the game, if we're honest about it. And they came out in the second half with a completely different attitude, and they just took the game by the scruff of the neck and got themselves back into it. It was a brilliant performance by them.
Yeah, I think first half was very similar to the Connacht final insofar as we didn't kind of play a running game in the first half. Strangely enough, we were kind of trying to, you know, just game management or whatever, and obviously try and stop Dublin, I suppose, pushing on themselves as they usually do. I think it was fairly evident after the John Small incident, there was a big lift in the Mayo performance right after that. If you recall, just after that hit, Pasquale had a goal chance. I think if that's a goal, that's game over.
Yeah,
we got lucky on that, and then we started running at Dublin. I mean, you can look at O'Connor keeping the ball in. We had a little bit of luck as well, I suppose, in so far as getting Kevin McLaughlin getting that score, and then we tacked down 2 points after that. I just think, you know, this Mayo team and the players that we have, the last 5 or 6 games with Dublin, Dublin would have known exactly who was playing for Mayo and how they play and what type of players. Yeah, we've probably 5 or 6 guys on this team that it's very difficult, you know, to tactically tie them down because you don't know what they're going to do because it's the first or second year. And I think that air of the unknown is suiting Mayo in so far as teams, you know, it's very difficult to plan, you know, how you're going to mark X or Y because they're moving around in all different areas. You know, they've a very powerful running game, similar to what Dublin have had in their strong 5 or 6 years previous. I think they've lost a few. I think their bench probably is a lot weaker now than it was, and they didn't have that you know, extra strength to come in and obviously try and control the game for them. Now, from a Mayo point of view, look at the second half. We were same as Galway. We were brilliant in the second half. Our energy levels were higher. We took scores under pressure. I mean, O'Donoghue was very good. We started winning ball around the middle. Lee Keegan got a lot of ball. And Dublin seemed to just lack that energy that they usually have, and Mayo penalised them.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny that you mentioned the young players because we were talking about it last week here when we were getting the build-up to it, and we were saying that the one thing that might catch the Dubs out, and it turned out to be the case, was the lack of baggage that a lot of those Mayo players had coming into this. So, you know, there's been a huge amount of pressure. I mean, you yourself were part of, wasn't it, 2004 and 2006 in the Kerry All-Ireland Finals. And there's always this pressure that comes with being a Mayo player of an expectancy from the fans and, you know, when are we finally going to get this monkey off our backs type of thing. And it's like, now, you know, when we were talking last week, it was felt that maybe that mightn't be the case, that players are just focused on doing their own job. But it has to be a bit of a factor. But these young lads, at the last, they just seem to say, well, you know what, the hell with this. Everyone thinks we're going to lose anyway, so we'll just go out and give it a go.
Yeah, look, and I mean, the only players really, if you look around, the only personnel around the country, apart from supporters and playing group who would have assumed they were going to win that game, was the supporters in the playing group. I mean, there was an awful lot of favouritism towards Dublin, and rightly so. I mean, they've beaten us the majority of games in the last probably 10 years, and particularly the big games. But, you know, I think, you know, that's always a phrase that people use, you know, we haven't won Ireland in X amount of time, and there's a weigh on the players. From a playing point of view, from, you know, even when I was back playing, you never really feel that pressure. You know, you're only feeling pressure on trying to... The pressure to win All-Ireland is massive, regardless of 20 years or 50 years or whatever it is. The trying to, you know, the enthusiasm of what can happen if you win an All-Ireland is... You know, it's a very fine line, and that pressure that players will have on themselves, to, because ultimately, you know, and I've always said it, the best team, you know, yes, it was a huge win against Dublin, but we've been here before numerous times. We've won semi-finals, we've beaten Dublin semi-finals before. It's to get over the line and perform on the biggest stage. That's a real sign of you know, a good team, and these young guys that we have came of age the last day, but was that our biggest game? Was that our biggest performance? You know, that's the question that people will be asking in Mayo insofar as Dublin has been our biggest vibe the last X amount of years. You know, we play a Kerry or Tyrone in a final. Can we get ourselves up to the level on that on the next occasion? And I think them young guys, you know, they have no weight on their shoulders. We have a few guys in that team that are there for quite a number of years, and I think the mix is good insofar as, you know, we probably have more newer guys now than we have of the older brigade, shall we say. Yeah. And that's benefiting me all going into the finals.
It was a big call by Horn to take off O'Shea as well, wasn't it? I mean, you know, your captain, your bit of a talisman, that type of thing. And you could see, I felt it was a moment when you watched the camera go to him on the sideline and he'd made this decision. Like, it was almost as if he was putting his career on the line. Here we go. I've got a, this better work out for me.
Yeah, look, it was a big call. You know, I know that Aidan was in an air boot the week before the Dublin game. He got a knock in it. I know that. So, I mean, he obviously wasn't 100% fit. And then against Dublin, you know, it's funny because if you're an inch off your peak form, you'll be found out. I mean, they're that, you know, they're a very, very difficult side to play against. Even when they're not playing well, they're still hard to get by. But insofar as the call, look, it's as simple as this. If we lost the game, exactly what you're saying, that's the end of it, the end of them, insofar as taking off your main fulcrum of a player. When it works out, it turns in your favour. I mean, that's what managers, I suppose, their credentials are based on, making these big calls. Maybe in the past he's been slow to do it. You know, it wasn't working out for Aidan the last day. And you could see our balance change when we brought on more younger guys, more of a running pattern, as opposed to a little bit slowing it down, driving it along and trying to get work off Aidan show up. Off in shoulders, shall we say? And it changed the game, but you know, I foresee him to be back in form. You know, come 2 or 3 weeks time.
It's not a question of it being the end of Aidan O'Shea or anything. No. Just in a game, sometimes you have to make the big calls, and I think it was a big call. Yeah. And as you said, it worked out. There was two managers in that game, and one made a good decision, and then it didn't work out for the other one. But Declan Drake caught up with Desi Farrell just after the game. Let's have a listen to that now.
Yeah, it was tough to watch in that second half for sure, and you know. A lot of those lads have been such warriors over the years. It was just, you could see that the limbs and the bodies were tired there, and it was just hard to really regenerate any level of momentum from anywhere in that second half. And you know, that's the nature of sport, and sometimes those things happen, and it's hard to come up with a fix or a solution for it. I think we're always, you know, in a state of transition. You know, players come and go, and that's been the case. There's been a significant amount of that over the last two seasons. I'm not sure what's going to happen next season. I'm sure some individuals reflect on where they're at and can they go again. There's a lot of new blood in there as well, and that need time and need exposure, and you know, I'm sure there's a lot of fellas will be looking forward to getting that type of time in a National League whenever that comes around. Dublin supporters, by and large, like, it's they'll still remember when there was a dearth of success in this county, and that's not too long ago. So I'm sure they appreciate what's gone on in the last number of years, and I'm sure they'll afford the team and these players whatever level of patience or courtesy or whatever is going to be needed over the next period of time.
Yeah, I think you can hear the disappointment. Obviously, that's inevitable in these situations. But, Conor, I do wonder, and it's hard because everybody is excited about the fact that Mayo won it and the way that they did, but you yourself said there that they got a couple of breaks and they got a little bit lucky maybe in certain aspects of it. Is there anywhere in there that you can say that the Dubs kind of left that one behind them a bit?
Look, I think, you know, they had a few uncharacteristic wides.
Yeah.
You know, the basketball goal chance was a big, big, big call. The bad miss. Obviously, the 45 that you know, we got to retake twice. You know, they're the elements that look. But on the Dublin side of it, I mean, you know, Dublin by nature will always create probably 3-4 goal chances, and that didn't happen the last day because they didn't have that. You know, I mean, the Paddy Small, Dean Rock inside. You know, Dean is obviously one of the most accurate players in the country, and he merits his place there every game. Paddy Small is not blessed with pace. You know, Kilkenny playing inside as well, when he's at his best, when he's out around and he's busy and he's out around the field, you know, scurrying up breaks and being the link player. Desi obviously changed those roles, and it was detrimental to Dublin because, you know, it's like, you know, I love that metaphor in work. If something is working, it's very difficult for players to buy into something you're going to try and change. Insofar as the last 6-7 years for Dublin, with Jim Gavin and the stuff that they've done, obviously has worked. I can appreciate a new manager coming in trying to change things, obviously.
Yeah.
But ultimately, to get a player to change his mindset in that case is very, very difficult. This has worked for us. Why are we going to try and change it? Because teams, the other teams aren't changing. They're not doing anything different. We've been the best team doing this for X amount of time. Mm. And I think those, you know, twinks and chinks that they tried didn't work. And I think, you know, Comerford by nature, yeah, he's a good goalkeeper. But you wouldn't have seen it in the 7 or 8 years that Klucko's been in goal.
Mm.
Goalkeeper getting caught for over-carrying. Two defenders hand-passing it over back to your 6-yard box and then getting turned over for a 45. I mean, yeah. Some of the mistakes they made were just very uncharacteristic of that Dublin team. And I think it's down to the leadership, you know, and the group that they have. They need to, the leaders that they have, as Desi Farrell said, the likes of Jez McCarthy, they're Fenton and them guys. You know, you can tell they're leggy. I mean, it's a long time at the top, and it's difficult to keep that, you know, that energy. But that's where, over the last 2 years, guys that have come into that Dublin team, they've added energy to the boys who are there. But I don't think this new group has done the same.
Yeah, well, to be fair as well, I mean, it takes a good team to recognise those mistakes and to capitalise on them in the moment. And Mayo did that, you know, they took advantage when it was offered to them. They took advantage, and I think there's big credit in that. Especially when they were down the way they were down, and, you know, they had to come back from behind the whole way through it. Look, we're not writing off Tyrone because we wouldn't do that, but it is... You know, favourites are Kerry for the other semi-final. It is likely that it'll be there, Kerry, that they're up against. You've faced them a couple of times. What do they need to do to beat a Kerry team that were, for a lot of people, the favourites before this thing even started, even with Dublin in it?
Well, firstly, you know, and it's no disrespect to people who say Kerry are the favourites, and rightly so, they've won their games pretty well.
Yeah.
No talk of Tyrone in the last... Apart from COVID, the issue that they're having, there hasn't been any. It's all Kerry. And I think that's very dangerous insofar as, go back to the All-Ireland that they played in the 03, 05, 08, them times where Kerry were probably more tipped as favourites than they are now. And they got turned over in them three finals. Tyrone are dangerous sides. They're good, they're strong. They're a lot of good footballers. And I do think Kerry, while they're fantastic footballers, offensively Kerry are magic.
Yeah.
Defensively, I would have worries about them. And I said this the last 2 or 3 years. They had the likes of Clifford coming in. These guys, fabulous footballers. They haven't improved their defensive side of things. They're getting bent behind the ball because they don't have the, you know, the Mark O'Shea's, the Tom O'Sullivan's, these guys in the past who are very, very, Tomás O'Shea, man-marking defenders, very tough.
Mm.
They don't have that in their armory now. That's why they're dropping X amount back. But we'll say if Kerry do beat Tyrone and Mayo going to face them, I think the way Mayo play will suit them insofar as a running game that we can get at their defence, because I genuinely do not think their defence is near as good as what people might think. And if we pressure them, get the matchups. We've got a couple of good, you know, the likes of O'Hara there, Keegan, Durkin, three of the probably the best defenders in the country at the moment, form-wise. And they'll stamp out the two or three top Kerry boys. And then it'll be interesting to see the guys in the shadows, shall we say, on that Kerry team. Can they step up to the fore, you know, and take the pressure off the likes of Paddy Clifford, David Clifford, Sean O'Shea? I mean, they're their main guys.
Yeah.
But I do think we have guys to curb them on a big, big day, which will obviously help Mayo. And to, as I said, to perform. I mean, to bring a performance to the final is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And as I said, all should take care of itself after that.
Excellent stuff. Well, I hope it is, Kerry, because that sounds like it's going to be a cracking match. Okay, Connor, great chatting to you. Really enjoyed that.
No,
we'll chat to you again sometime. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Connor Mortimer there, ex-Mayo footballer, of course, in two All-Irelands himself. Didn't get across the line, but a great footballer. I think he was an All-Star in 2006. I think he got 135 or something throughout the championship. An amazing point scorer. And Declan, you know, getting back to the Dubs, It was a hugely disappointing day for all Dublin supporters. A game that, as I said, at halftime, I was looking at the match going, this is over. There weren't even, it didn't seem to be anyone up against them. Is there going to be a fallout from all of this, do you think?
Yeah, inevitably so, Reg. I left here last Saturday morning on the way to Croke Park, quietly confident that there would be one last sting in the tail of this Dublin team, that they would go out against Mayo and produce a performance to repel, if you like, the critics that had been gathering on them, on their back. Now, obviously, it was well justified at the end of the day. Everything that the experts said could happen, did happen. But the stat, like 10 points to 4, as you say, at half time, to score 3 points in 35 minutes of championship football in the second half, and your opposition to score 3 times more than you, you're not going to win the game. When I went to extra time, I just turned to the Mayo people beside me. I said, lads, it's your day here. And unfortunately, that's the way it proved. We just did not have the answer to them. There were so many basic mistakes on the day, as Connor said, uncharacteristic mistakes by certain players at certain times. And he's right about the Basquel incident as well, because Dublin could have been potentially down to 14 men at that particular stage. The referee didn't see it that way. He allowed the advantage. And even if Colley had popped the point over at that stage, I think we might have gone 8 points up, I think, perhaps, or 9 points, I'm not sure. Yeah. But it still would have been, you know, a big enough advantage. But look, at the end of the day, Mayo came with a game plan. They were strong. They were determined. They were repaid for all the luck that they didn't have in previous games against us in one afternoon. And they won the game deservedly. No arguments about that at the end of the day. But yeah, there'll be a lot of soul searching to be done in Dublin over the next few weeks when, you know, the club championship is done and dusted and the powers that be can sit down and assess things again, because we do need an overhaul of the situation at the moment. The unfortunate thing about Reg is that you may have seen the last of some great servants on the day. You know, possibly Michael Fitzsimons, Philly McMahon, James McCarthy maybe might go as well. You have a couple of players in the halfway club. Are they in or are they out? You know, in young McCaffrey, Jack McCaffrey and Paul Mannion, to name just two. So, look, there's a long winter ahead of us. But well done to Mayo on the day. They did deserve their victory and congratulations to them.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, well, it was a double header, of course, and the ladies were in action as well against Mayo. And they did manage to get the job done. And you caught up with Mick Bowen afterwards. Let's have a listen to that.
Really excited at the start. Clipped a couple of great points. Looked like we were going to, you know, play some sensational stuff. Found ourselves open at the back. I think Alwyn Carey got a bit of rush of blood. And in fairness to her, like, playing just in a completely different role. And then we found ourselves just with an overlap on the front foot, and then we had lost the ball. During that period, actually, we turned over 13 balls. 10 of them were inside our attacking half of the field. That was very disappointing. And then coming towards the closing stages, the first half, Sinead and Lindsay, just the management of the game and the two key scores just to steady us again. Then the second half came about, and you could see, like, amazing. It's a pitch like no other, because you can see that, you know, no matter what stage you're at or what fitness levels you're at, playing out there is completely different. And it does sap your energy. You know, people were starting to flag a little bit, and then to have the opportunity to bring in Goldie and Ava Rutledge, both who have been phenomenal players for this group, but have had their own challenges. Ava with a concussion and Goldie tearing the hamstring off the bone. So, huge pride in what they've given back to the group, and while their performances wouldn't be at the level that they know they're capable of, just delighted to have got minutes in the legs out in that arena.
Yeah, great win, you know, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, true to their 8th consecutive All-Ireland final, Reg, which is a tremendous level of consistency. And it was announced last night, actually, that Hill 16 is going to be open for that final. Tickets go on sale via Ticketmaster next week. Now, Sunday week will be Dublin's 12th All-Ireland final since they qualified for their first back in 2003. And this is the first group of Dublin girls that will play in front of a crowd on the hill in an All-Ireland final. So that's pretty good. Have their issues, injuries, concerns for Niamh Collins, Carla Rowe and Niamh McAvoy as well. So plenty for Mick to sort out over the next couple of weeks. But hey, look, isn't it just great to be there for them once again? And hopefully the Dublin support will turn out on the day and get behind this fantastic group of players.
I think they will, no question about it. Yeah, it was a great result and well done to them. A couple of points there you have as well there.
Yeah, we had the 2020 Minor Football Championship Finals took place in Parnell Park during the week, Reg. So we have to say congratulations to both Ballyboden St Enda's and Temple Oak Sing Street. A nice Southside double there the other night at the Neller, winning the 2020 Minor A Championships. The Senior Hurling League finals take place tonight. The big one is at Parnell Park at 6 o'clock. It's Ballyboden St Enda's taking on Nafina in the Division 1 final. That was operated on a north-south basis this year, so that the two best teams are coming head-to-head tonight in just a couple of weeks ahead of the championship. It'll be a great occasion, and club championship starting in a couple of weeks' time, so plenty for Dublin local GAA fans to get excited about over the next few weeks.
No doubt about it. Plenty is right. Okay, that's the football for this morning. We're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about one of the biggest derby days there is in hurling, Limerick taking on Cork, and Sean Lane will be in studio to analyse that with me. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Text message coming in there from Noel saying, I hope Mayo don't forget what happened to Donegal when they beat Dublin in Dublin's last championship and defeating Kerry, them done in the final. Mayo have won nothing yet, so hopefully they can keep going. And I think we touched on that at the end, there's no doubt about it. I think they will be focused on that. But it's time for hurling now, and if you were to read the Examiner, you'd think there was only one team in it. Of course, it was formerly the Corfic Examiner. I wonder why that is the case. But 40,000 Cork and Limerick fans will be among the largest crowd coming up since the pandemic began this weekend. And Irish Rail have already warned fans from both areas not to even bother going to the train station because there's no tickets. They're all fully booked. So you got to make your own way up. So there's a huge amount of excitement building for this game, the All-Ireland Final, of course. And Sean Lane is here in studio to discuss it with me, Sean. And I suppose, like, you know, it's the biggest derby down around that neck of the woods that you can get. Cork taking on Limerick. Rivalries that go back. The traditional county, as you said, I suppose, being Cork, who played the traditional style of hurling. It's a huge game, but I suppose Cork will have to try and find something different to beat this Limerick team.
Yeah, Reggie, it's Cork haven't won it, as we all know, since 2005. And I see it, Cork have 30 All-Irelands and would be regarded as a traditional county. And Limerick have 9, haven't won 2 of the last 3. But it's Cork will have to come out with all the plans. I think if they line out and tug out tomorrow and Cork puck the ball into the Limerick half-back line and the Limerick goalie, Nicky Quaid, pucks it into the Cork half-back line, I think there'll be only one winner, which will be Limerick. I think Cork have to get a lot of things right. They have to get their matchups right. They have to decide who picks up Aaron Gilland, you know, but it's O'Donoghue or O'Leary, so they'll have to get that right. They may have either picked Owen Cadigan, I see, is picked at left half back for Cork, so he might, you know, pick up Keane Lynch when he roams, rather than having the Cork centre back coming out and leaving space there. So, you know, there's a lot of things that have to get right. Cork have to obviously get their own puck outs correct, and sometimes people, when they take stats, they say we got 25 of our own 35 outs we won, but they're only pucking it to the corner back. Cork will have to, if they go short, which they probably will, they really have to measure their puck out success by getting possession inside of the Limerick 65, and that's not going to be easy, because all of these the half forward line of Limerick, of Gerard Hegarty, Keane Lynch, Tom Morrissey, they're going to be all over this Cork team if they're going to try and hand pass the ball after a short puck out and bring it into the other half. So a great game to look forward to, a lot of things to look out for, and really looking forward to it, Reg.
As I said to you, the Examiner, you know, very much heavily in favour of a Cork victory here. You know, I remember growing up, the strong Cork teams that they were. Hurling was, you know, it was such a dominant sport nationally, but, you know, within the county itself as well, obviously being their main sport. But, like, is it fair to give them as much chance as they're being given in the paper there against the Limerick side that over the last two or three seasons have just been so dominant, and we've seen already being able to come from behind in the way that they did earlier on in the championship and, you know, put that game to rest, and their level of fitness seemed to be off the charts, you know. How have Cork gotten to the stage? How have they come up?
Well, Cork obviously they lost to Limerick, Reg, I think 225-117 the first day out. But they've come on a run now. They've beaten Dublin, and Dublin played well against them, but Cork were far superior, and when Dublin half caught them near the end, Cork pulled away. Cork had a smashing game then against Clare, and this will bring them on tons. Tony Kelly probably should have scored the last puck of the game, but Patrick Collins had a smashing save inside in the Cork goal. And then they went on to Kilkenny and played really well against Kilkenny and almost threw it away. But there's just something there this year about Cork. They're on a run. They've had three great games. I think Croke Park suits them, Reggie. I think the possession game they played, the running game. Couple of things that that Cork, if they get right, there is no doubt if they get this right and get Jack O'Connor and Robbie O'Flynn in space and possession, they have pace in abundance. They could run Limerick for goals. If you were sitting in the Cork dugout before the match, you'd, you know, not unlike Mayo last week, you'd be saying, well, let's keep this as tight as we possibly can till half time, you know, a point or two in it each way, and then second half let's have one cut at this and start running at Limerick from all places. It's not too long ago Limerick went in odds on favourites to beat Kilkenny in an All-Ireland semi-final and got overturned. And you know, what the reasons for it that day, maybe there was a small bit of complacency, but I do remember there was three or four short puckouts by Limerick into under the Cusick stand on the far side to the cornerback, and all of a sudden they were devoured by Kilkenny lads and the ball was taken off them. If Limerick come out with an attitude of kind of, you know, this should be ours, The opposition will be wrong for them. Cork can punish you with pace and with goals.
What are the big matchups that we should look out for today? Players that are, you know, going to be going toe to toe.
Well, definitely. I mean, the big decision is Niall O'Leary or Sean O'Donoghue. Which one of them is going to take up Aaron Gillan? I think Robert Downey from the Glen, he's definitely going to have his work cut out, Mark and Young Flanagan. So that's the first thing. I think what they may do then, and this is a key one, Keane Lynch drops short and drops into midfield and is a playmaker. Cork can't afford it, as I said earlier, to have Mark Coleman go after him and leave the middle open. So they have picked Owen Cadigan, who, as we know, won an All-Ireland football final with Cork back from the Douglas Club in 2010. He may follow Keane Lynch, which would leave Tim O'Mahony and Mark Coleman in the half-back line, and they may be just able to, they're very, very fast, both of them, they may be able to hold the two wing forwards from Limerick. But up front is where I think Cork will struggle unless they can find space. Like Seamus Harnedy has to have a great game. There's no doubt that Cork will try the short puckouts, but it won't always work. They'll have to start pucking it long. You know, the only place I think that Cork can puck it long is down on Seamus Harnedy and also Declan Hanlon, because I actually think Cork will be wasting their time pucking it right or pucking it left down on Gerard Hegarty or down on Dermot Burns or Kyle Hayes. I think it'll be a waste of time. So there's a lot of things Cork have to get right. But as I said, Reggie, if they can stay in the game, if it's a wet day, and you know, with 20 minutes to go, Cork will have the pace. I know they're starting with young Kingston. He came in the last day and got 7 points against Kilkenny, but at the same time he's starting tomorrow. If he gets going well and Patrick Horgan has a smashing game up front, Harnedy can win some possession, and they're still in the game with 15 or 20 minutes yet, don't write off Cork running in two goals. Yeah. Don't write that off.
Okay. Declan?
Sean, you, of course, had plenty of managerial experience at inter-county level, minor, under 21, and the club level as well. The decision Kieran Kingston made the last day about Shane to leave him on the bench, then bring him in and have the impact that he had in terms of 7 points. If you were the manager sitting down during the week to pick that Cork team, and it was your responsibility to try and bring the Liam McCarthy Cup back to Cork on Monday night, would you have made that call? Would you have started him?
Well, there's an added dimension to that. He's actually his son as well, so that probably makes it a little bit different, and we'll probably have his mother in the kitchen making sure that he's picked as well. So things, life isn't as simple as it used to be. But you have to put it in context, Declan, that when Shane Kingston was left on the bench, he wasn't playing well. He had got a goal against Dublin, but did very little in that game and didn't perform very well against Clare. But when he did come in, he set the world on fire. Now, it's you know, you do or you don't. I'd have started him. I think that he shouldn't penalise his own young lad because, you know, he's a son. He certainly, if he wasn't his son, he definitely would start him. To come into an All-Ireland semi-final and score 7 points from play and to be left on the bench the next day, I'm not too sure that would be good for his motivation. I think he'll go at it right from the start. I think he's learned his lesson that, you know, he didn't play well in a few games and he didn't start. The same principle would apply, that if he starts and he doesn't play well, he'd be taken off.
But there's a wealth of experience in the Cork backroom staff as well, not just Kieran Kingston. You've Donal O'Grady, who won two All-Irelands. The Rock is there, of course, as well. And Ger Cunningham, of course, who has had his hand in many a success in Cork over the years as well. So they won't be slow about making the right decisions on the line if they have to.
No, they won't. And here's one, and we've seen it with in football. There is nothing wrong with if he's not going well after 20 or 25 minutes to take him off and bring him back in then with 20 minutes to go. We've seen the Tyrone captain,
Peter Canavan,
being brought back in and made a huge, not only a psychological boost, but had a couple of plays when he came back in. I mean, if you were playing for Limerick there and you were marking Kieran Kingston, you saw the back of him at half time and you said, well, there's nothing wrong with that now. And next thing you see him appear coming back in again, you'll be wondering what's going on. I still think that, you know, if I'm asked for a prediction, you'd have to go with Limerick. But I actually see Cork having one hell of a chance here, being still in the game and being right on the edge of getting a goal or two before this is over and actually winning the game.
It sounds like it's going to be an absolutely cracking match. I mean, for some people, they probably might have thought that Limerick would be favourites that might run away with this, but Sean, you seem to think it's going to be a tight one with Cork having a chance even at the end.
Yeah, I do, and you know, I preface it by saying a lot of things have to go right for Cork, and I'm not going to repeat myself, but if they go right and if they curtail them, the exact same as Mayo did with Dublin last week in the football, and well done to Mayo as a Dublin man. I think it's fair that I recognise that, but equally I think Cork have a great chance. Put it this way, I think with 15 minutes to go, I think Robbie O'Flynn, Jack O'Connor, would be very important that both of them are still left in the field. I think they'll have superior pace to all of the tired Limerick backs and could run two, if not possibly three goals. And go back to 1990, Cork played Galway in an All-Ireland final and were well beaten at half time. But they came out and they got four goals the second half and won the All-Ireland. I think it was something like 5-15 to 2-20 or 2-21. So they're quite capable of getting goals, Cork.
I think Cork had God on their side and Cannon O'Brien that day on the sideline, to be fair.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter what they have on their sideline tomorrow. It sounds like it's going to be an absolutely cracking game and one that we can all really, really look forward to. I can't wait, no question about it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking football to the end of the show. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, and as always here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. Time to turn our attention to football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. I'm good. Thanks. Yourself?
Ah, great. Absolutely great. Looking forward to a great hurling final tomorrow, no doubt about it. Really looking forward to that one, and plenty of sport going on this weekend. It was a bit disappointing during the week football wise for Rovers fans, going down 4-2 to Floritalia in Europe.
Yeah, it was a disappointing result, Reggie, and I think what's going to kind of concern them more and disappoint them even more is the performance, because it turned into a bit of a horror show, to be honest with you. I just thought from the start they were just very naive in their approach. Stephen Bradley made a comment before the match that he felt Floritalia were a better side than Slovan Bratislava. Now, I didn't think that at all, but as I say, that was the remark that he made before the match. So if that's the case, it begs the question, surely you go into the game and you'd be more cautious. Why would you be so open and why would you be so expansive in your approach, I suppose? And every time they attacked Floritalia, it looked like they were going to score, because as I say, Shamrock Rovers were so open, particularly that midfield area. There was no protection whatsoever for the back three, and I felt sorry for the likes of O'Brien and Lopez and Sean Hoare at the back, because only Gary O'Neill was sitting in front of them. But Dylan Watts, who plays kind of like a free spirit when he plays in midfield, and Richie Towell, who's very attack-minded as well, it was only really O'Neill. And O'Neill is not the type of player that's going to be getting around the pitch, making tackles and challenges. He's more a reader of the game and making interceptions. So he was very isolated in that area as well. And as I say, it just led to all the problems. And every time Floritalia attacked, it looked like they were going to score. But in saying that, on the other hand, Shamrock Rovers created a lot of the chances themselves, and going forward they looked quite dangerous. So it does give them hope going into the next leg. But even when they got themselves back into the match at 3-2, and at that stage, Reggie, it was late in the game, and considering how the game had gone, and they never deserved to be only a goal behind, you think we're getting out of jail here, lads. We'll absolutely snap your hands off for 3-2. Then they went down the pitch and conceded again to make a 4-2. And again, from just being naive and not being managing the game well and just seeing it out. So I'd say the performance really disappointed Stephen Bradley. I think the responsibility lies with him in terms of the approach and how naive they were, because nothing changed at half-time, even though it was as bad in the first half. Nothing changed in regards to that. So they laid a serious plan next week to just shut the opposition out. But the positive for them is that they can create chances, and going forward, they look dangerous, and they're certainly capable of getting two, but are they capable of keeping the other team out? That's the worry I'd have.
Yeah, and there's a lot of pressure on as well. Like, from a monetary point of view, they really need to try and get a result in this one. If they win this, am I right in saying they get to the real money stages?
This is it. One-off game now to get to the group stages, Reggie. Yeah. So they're talking about something like 2.3 million or whatever it is that's on offer. As you say, it's huge money. But they can't really focus on that either. They have to obviously just play the game for what it is. And as I say, we watch Shamrock Rovers every week, and the problem I felt with them looking at it the other night, Reggie, is 99% of the games here, they'll dominate and keep possession because obviously they're best team. But when you go into that level of opposition and that stage of the competition that we're in now, you're going to get punished for these mistakes. And I just felt they were naive in their approach and they got caught out for it. So they're still in with a chance, but as I say, they have to get they'll need to score at least two and keep the opposition out just to take it extra time. So it's a big ask, but as I say, they do have the players that will create the chances. It's just keeping them out at the other end.
Well, the league was a little bit easier on them. Olabi's hat-trick for Finn Harp, stunning Pats, and Pats now, that's a bad slip-up by them, three points behind Rovers at the top of the table, one that I suppose everybody, including themselves, probably would have expected them to win. Could come back to bite them badly.
That's a bad result for us. Yeah, I know it's a difficult place to go, as we all kind of remark on every week, and it can't be Ballybuffet, but you'd expect St. Pat's to go up there and win. In fairness to Finn Harps, they have won their last two matches despite a dreadful run before that. But the fact that St. Pat's were obviously hoping to keep the pressure on Shamrock Rovers, and the fact that they weren't playing and put a little bit, as I say, a bit of pressure on them, it's a poor result for them. And I've said it, you know, a couple of times the last few weeks, St. Pat's really, to be fair to them, the position that they're in, it's probably a little bit early yet to consider them as winning a title. They're still building, to be fair to Stephen O'Donnell. So if they were to finish second or third, I'm sure he would have been happy with that. The position to find themselves in now, of course, they're going to go for the league, but it's really Shamrock Rovers who are the strongest team that will go on and win the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go across the water. We were all excited about the start of the Premier League last week. We were raving about various different teams. We wondered how United would get on. They answered that. We wondered how Liverpool would get on. They answered that. And then Spurs, we kind of all felt they hadn't got a chance against a star-studded City team. I think there were 6-7, maybe even up to 9-1 to win that game. And then they go and do what always happens.
Yeah, I thought it was a great start to the league, Reggie. As you say, all the teams that we were kind of wondering how will they do, they all kind of stood up and made statements. As you see, United were really good. Now, I thought Leeds were poor themselves and never learned the mistakes of what they made last year at Old Trafford when they went down 6-2. They were just so open again. But United were very good, and Bruno hitting the ground running is great for them. Obviously, as you say, Liverpool also I thought were very strong. We mentioned them last week. They did well. I know it was Norwich, but still, it was a good start for them. Salah getting off the mark as well. And Man City were probably the ones that disappointed overall over the weekend, because we did give them the big build-up. And we were probably a little bit disrespectful to Spurs in the sense that we thought they had no chance. Obviously, Spurs are a good side, new manager Nuno as well. But I suppose the whole Kane saga that's been played out, we all felt if he does go, and I know he's still there at the moment, that maybe Spurs have no chance. But they still have some very good players, despite obviously not having Harry Kane for the game. And they showed that with Son and Moura, Lucas Moura and Son and Bergwijn up front. They were very, very good. So it was a great win for them, a great start. Obviously, Man City had to get a lot better. But I just thought the league in general, the whole kind of, in terms of looking for a more competitive league, I felt it was a really good start, and I think we'll get that this year, because obviously Chelsea had a great win as well, and of course of Lukaku to come into the team.
Well, you know, I was talking to Ken earlier, the United victory was very convincing, and someone that we love to hate on this show, Pogba, with four assists, is he going to actually have a good season, do you think, for United?
Well, that's the question, Reggie. Like, you'd love to be sitting in a position here to be, say, give him all the plaudits like we know his ability deserves, but be safe in the knowledge that we know what he's going to deliver every week. But that's the question with him. You just don't know what he's going to deliver every week. Mm. We all know the ability. We all know the talent. We saw it in the Euros. We saw it many times before. But it's not good enough if you're looking to win a league or win a Champions League or whatever the case may be, to be flitting in and out and doing it for a couple of matches and not doing it then for another two or three matches. So that's the big question. It's been a question about him for a long time. If he delivers like he did last week on a weekly basis, well, it gives Man United some chance, as we all know. But there's a reason that question gets asked, because he hasn't done it on a weekly basis yet, Reggie, so that remains to be seen. But hopefully he can, because for United fans, certainly, you look at the link-up with him and Bruno, and obviously they're on the same page in terms of world-class players, and Sancho to come into the team as well. I did worry about them not getting a centre-forward, and I still may do, but you look at the likes of Greenwood, and I say Sancho, Bruno chipping in with goals. Varane is an interesting one as well to come back into the team, a world-class player, so they've got off to a great start, but it's just the start, Reggie.
Yeah, well, they have Southampton, you know, and this is the real test. You know, you start a season off well, go away to Southampton tomorrow and get a result there, and then you get on that roll. So it's a crucial game, actually, going away to Southampton.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah. And I think the way the fixtures are set up for them, they could, I think, is it West Ham next week, but they've three or four fixtures, very winnable, and all of a sudden you can find yourself on 12 points and the momentum is with you and you're up and running, sitting top of the table and everything's going swimmingly, and that's what you want at the start of the season. So, as you said, that's the challenge for them now. You should be beating Southampton. Southampton, I think, will struggle this year. They lost to Everton last week, 3-1 as well, so they should be beating Southampton. And yeah, that is the challenge. Everybody, like even Solskjaer said it himself, this is the year now that they have to deliver a title challenge.
Yeah.
I think that the kind of the pass that he was getting up to now for being the former legend and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
I think that's gone now. Yeah, exactly. So they have to deliver a title challenge and challenge the likes of, I still maintain it's Chelsea and City, but United have to be in the mix for him to be keeping his job.
Well, that brings me on to my next point. Arteta must be in huge pressure as well for his job, and they've got Chelsea, Arsenal, of course, playing Chelsea tomorrow in the Emirates. And it seems weird to be saying a bit of a must win for Arteta, but like it's kind of getting that way, isn't it?
It is, Reggie. Yeah, and it is kind of crazy to think someone's like already worried about his job after only a game in. But I think it's filtering into what was going on last season as well and stuff. And obviously the lack of recruitment. Now you can blame the board and the club for that more so than Arteta in terms of what he was allowed to spend. But the worry I would have is you look at them last week and all their failings of before were evident to see against Brentford in terms of how weak they are defensively and that almost that soft underbelly that we've often spoken about with Arsenal, that was all there to see still even last week. So I would have thought Arteta would have addressed these issues by now. I know he brought in Ben White, 50 million. It's a lot of money, Reggie, for a player who was playing in the back three in Brighton, and then he played him as one of the centre halves last week. And he really struggled in that position against Ivan Toney. They're after spending 25 million now on Ramsdale, the goalkeeper, and I'd have question marks over that as well. So all is not well, certainly, that Arsenal camp, and he is under pressure. There's no getting away from that. He's under pressure, Arteta.
Yeah, no question about it. It'd be interesting. I'm kind of just Brentford being the team they are. They're away to Crystal Palace, and the fact they won last week and they're the new boys on the block, it's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and Brentford were great last week, Reggie, even in terms of just the scenes on Friday night, because they have that, like, intimate ground and the fans behind them, and it was really good. Kickstarted the weekend, I suppose, and kickstarted the Premier League being back, and the fact that the fans were in the stadium as well. I thought it was a great atmosphere. So they got off to a great start. They'll just look to stay in the division. That's all they need to do, really. And again, that's a very winnable game for them against Crystal Palace. Obviously, Vieira's coming there, and that's kind of question marks over that as well in terms of how he's going to get on, and he's trying to bet his way in and with a new team as well. So it'll be one to keep an eye on. But I think Brentford, I have a sneaky feeling Brentford will be okay, Reggie. As I say, they have a decent team. I like the way they go about things. The attack, they're on the front foot. They have a decent player in Ivan Toney up front, and Mwemba caused all sorts of problems for Arsenal last week. And they have the crowd, and that kind of, they look as though they have that connection with the crowd. And that'll carry you a long way as well, Reggie, if you're playing in front of your own fans every week and they're cheering you on the way they did last week. So I think Brentford might be okay.
Yeah, okay. Quick prediction, Tip or Cork tomorrow?
Oh, it's hard to look past Limerick.
Sorry, I meant Limerick or Cork.
Yeah, sorry, right. Yeah, it's hard to look past Limerick, right? Yeah, they're very strong.
It is.
Yeah, I'm going to go Limerick.
Yeah, I'll go Limerick myself. Okay. All right, Alan, and as always, great
If them Cork fellas win it, you'd never hear the end of it, Reggie.
All right, we'll catch up with you next week. Now, that's all we've got time for this week on the show. Thanks for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. Thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, thanks to producer Jane McNamara, and I'd like to thank all of our guests who joined us on the show again today. We'll be back.